Welcome back to another episode of Awareness Action Enneagram Podcast. This is part two of What is Your Type with my friend Johnny. If you haven't listened to the first part of this episode, you should go back and listen to that because it gives some context for some of the things that we are talking about in this episode. Again, the purpose of this episode is to kind of pull back the layer a little bit, pull back all the descriptors and delineation of language to kind of see what does a normal human being look like, feel like, sound like, act like, who operates with this type, how so many different types can do the exact same thing, but for completely different reasons. And I think in this episode, it really shows the nuance of typing, of understanding how complex humans are. You know, at the end of the day, the Enneagram is not a complicated system. It's not a complicated model. What's complicated is humans. And so if we are able to kind of keep that in the forefront of our minds as we are typing, as we are handling the Enneagram, I think we can hold these things with much greater respect. And as you'll learn in this episode, why it's so important to hold type loosely, to have preliminary hypotheses, and to continue to falsify your data. So without further ado, the second part of Mario and Johnny, and a surprise appearance from me.
All right. So Johnny, how do we want to do this? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Okay. Hey,
look, let me start off by saying, okay. I am not wedded to any, you know, assumption or assessment I made prior. I always try to be clear about that from the outset. And it's also why I like to do a follow-up conversation because any conversation with somebody is a moment in time and you know, we can look different. So, I'm happy to, hear your reaction, your thoughts since then, any questions you have, you know, whatever it is you want to talk about. We're good.
For okay. I may have said this at the end of our last one. I don't recall. But okay. I will say when I was first introduced to the Enneagram 12-ish years ago, I hesitantly landed on an Enneagram 6. And it just never really sat well with me. Shortly after that, maybe just a couple years after that, the Enneagram 2 just felt more compelling. With what I knew about the Enneagram, it just seemed to fit. And I used to tell people what seemed to make it connect with me was kind of the shadow side of it, like just some of the insecurities of a 2 and things like that I seemed to resonate with. At the time, kind of embracing the school of thought that you have access to both your wings. I understand your take on wings, but I just felt like I was on the spectrum of that side. Between 1 and 3, I'm somewhere over there. And then in a 2, leaning into and learning more about the integration, disintegration, health, and health. What's the language you use again?
Neglected and support strategies.
Neglected and support strategies of the 4 and the 8. And so I say all that to say when you said 7, it's just not a number that's even been on the radar.
Yeah.
And so it was not in an unhealthy way, but it was jarring. Like when you're like pretty sure you're navigating 7, I'm like, yeah, of course you'd say 7. It's like the only number I haven't really considered. Okay. So that just feels like the foundation delay to just be like that. That's why that was rattling. And then it was additionally, I'll use the word fun. It was additionally fun to tell some of my other friends who thoroughly enjoy the Enneagram, Creek being one, Seth Abram being another, but also a few colleagues here at work that help train it and use it for some of their training and stuff as well. They're not unfamiliar with the Enneagram. And all of them were a little taken aback by the new potential 7 typing. But it was an opportunity to help lean in a little bit more into my pretty fresh training of preserving, navigating, transmitting, right? And learning this new language and this new categorization and trying to lean into that some more. So off to the races of, I shouldn't use the word debate because it hasn't been a debate. It's been a discussion. various like Marco Polo chats of like, well, what about this? Or something comes up and asking like, what's my motivation when I say this or I do that or I wear this, whatever. And just trying to lean into all that more. And that's where it's been just lively, I suppose, for the last month, off and on, between different friends and colleagues. You know, we get past the holidays and I recall like you're willing to do a follow-up call. And here we are, just because it's been just kind of a low-grade topic here and there. And so, and I thought it was very kind of you to, after you kind of drop a bomb of like, you're maybe a Navigating Seven, offering to do a follow-up call. Truth is, I don't really have an agenda with this. I'm not, I have no agenda to like, convince you otherwise, or like, or say, or even pose like a case for my two-ness. And the only reason I invited Creek and Seth Abram was just like, maybe they could ask some questions that I'm not thinking of. I am familiar. I've been around the Enneagram for a season, but not like them. You know, they're clearly in it much more. And then they know me well. Seth Abram, I've known since high school, and we've been friends for a very long time. And then Creek, it's been a couple years now. And so that's why I just wanted to invite them to the call. Maybe, just maybe they have a more thoughtful, helpful question to unlock my brain to understand things better, or for you to explain things in a different way that helps it land with me a little bit better. That's the intent. That's it. Yeah. There's nothing really else there. So
Or for me to falsify my initial hypothesis, right?
So
I mean, really, it's, you know, look, you know, I forget how long ago it was we talked, but it's been at least a month, right?
And so
you know, I don't remember all of the details of why I came to a particular conclusion, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't, you know, go back and watch the recording. So I don't have, you know, it's not in my interest to try to convince anybody of my right sort of thing, right? And I know that you're not expecting that from me. But I do have a question on something you said there. You talked about resonating with some of the shadow aspects of type two. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, again, my limited understanding of the Enneagram compared to you and Creek and others. There were things explained to me about the two of caring deeply about how other people perceive me. And it's an area that I would have liked to knee-jerk say that that's not a thing for me. But if I'm being honest, it's a big thing for me. It's something I do care about. I care about what others think of me, and I work really hard to keep a good impression of me, as far as other people's perspective of me. And that was one area. Now, I'm not saying only twos care about what other people think of them. That was just a thing that I was like, yeah, that's something I really care about. And I combat it often by being really, really helpful. And so it was just the pieces were just kind of lining up for me. That kind of made sense over there. And again, the more I kind of read, learned, watched about all the Enneagram types, when it would get to the two, it just felt a little bit more like it was reading my mail a little bit. When it came to some of my motives or why I do the things I do, you pushed very gently last time. I think it was you were pushing against the two-ness, because at one point you said, not at one point have you tried to flatter me in this call, or you said something along those lines, I think. And I had time to think about that, and flattery used to be a tool of mine that I felt like I would use often, to the point where I was embarrassed or ashamed at how often I would use it. And so I've actually worked really diligently in the last couple of years to turn the volume down on my flattery, because I just didn't like it as a manipulative manner to get someone to like me. It just felt inauthentic.
Yeah.
But it seemed to align with two-ness. And so it was me trying to tame my two-ness, not to not be two, but just to be like a little less on the flattery, man. Like, in fact, it maybe doesn't even come across as authentic, even though I choose to think it was. But anyways, it was areas like that, prone to flattery, prone to care too much about what people think about me. And that leaned a little bit more then into that four and eightness, right? Where I used to envy my fours, because on the my friends that were four, because on the surface, they seemed to not care what other people thought of them, which I know is not true, but they seemed to navigate life in that way. At least that's how it came across. And so there are moments in the last few years for me that I just cared a little less about what other people thought. And for me, that felt like a more healthy version of my two-ness, if you will. And so it was just continued to reinforce, like, I must be a two.
Yeah.
Now, you threw out just a few little nuggets in the last chat, though, where you're like, yeah, but I think a navigating seven would have done that, but this is maybe their way of doing it. I don't know how quite you framed it, but you also mentioned that you have family members, maybe your wife or daughter, I don't recall, that are sevens. You've been around it. And so for me, I'm like, your time is valuable. I want to learn. Like, what are you seeing, and why are you like, yes, I just really think this is probably where you land.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Preek, what questions do you have for Johnny or observations?
I will say the seven thing was, it was on my options of potentials, but I'm still recategorizing what the seven category looks like. But I think some of the differences or some of the observations I've had of Johnny is, for one, he loves cool little trinkets, and there's some foreness there of nice things that represent identity, or just I don't know, like, are you familiar with like EDC, like everyday carry stuff?
Oh yeah.
Mario? Yeah. So like Johnny and I'm a little bit into it. Johnny's more into it than I am. So it's like, it's that stuff.
And
like
when I've been to his house. I know of it primarily as what's your preferred handgun and, you know, boot and that sort of thing. So, but I'm assuming you guys are talking about something a little bit different, right?
Well, it's in that category, but it's like little knives and I don't know, trinkets, wallets. Your everyday carry when it comes to just useful things that you can have on your person or backpack or something like that. And then like when I've gone to his house, like he has a really unique house. He has like a hidden library where he keeps all of his books and stuff like that. Johnny's car is very not subdued. It's not flashy, but it's like, it's obvious that this guy cares about his car in at least the external sense. I don't know about the maintenance sense. So there's, I don't know. So that's like transmitting or seven, or there's something there. And then there's just a lot of equal sharing. I don't know how to necessarily delineate between all these different things I observe. He does connect with people. It's his job to connect with people well and ask good questions. Oftentimes in like our Marco Polo channel, he's the one that's probably keeping up with it more than the other three of us. Fashion choice is, it is definitely, my observation is he definitely thinks through it, and there is a flashy element to it. Again, I don't know if that's transmitting or seven or something else, but there's intentionality in fashion where that is not, I have intentionality, but a different way. But
yeah.
So those are just kind of things I've observed that I'm not quite entirely sure how to delineate where those land.
Yeah.
Well, and let me chime in, because I do want to hear from you, Mario, to respond to that.
Enough of Creek, right?
Well, no, yeah. I just mean no. I, I mean, this is valuable because now you're seeing me from another person's perspective, because he knows me better than you do. And so that is really very valuable, I think, to this conversation. Yeah. And so as we were chatting even about that and back and forth, I tried leaning into the sevenness. Like I've tried to like not bristle for the last month, but to be like, what would that look like? It's a seven. And all of these things that he's pointing out, and I know this this way oversimplifies a navigating seven, what I'm about to say. But when I think about all that stuff, it does seem fun to me. And I know that's way over generalizing, but like all those things bring me joy. I enjoy them. I used to be curious if it had this foreignness aspect to it of wanting to be different or stand out or be a little bit unique. And that resonated a little bit. But I feel like it's less of that. It feels more like I just enjoy those things and they make me happy. Having a hidden library in my house, that's really fun for me. And so I've been trying to lean into, like, I guess you can see how that could be seven-esque. But yeah, anyways, okay.
Yeah. So the thing to remember about the seven, and again, I want to be extra clear that I am not trying to steer us in a particular direction.
Sure.
What is going on at the heart of the seven is a need for some kind of stimulation, you know, and so we call it striving to feel excited, only because striving to feel stimulated is a little too masturbatory sounding. In Latin America, Maria Jose has to refer to it as, you know, striving to feel stimulated, because excited has that connotation, okay? And so what the seven is looking for is some kind of buzz. Now, the problem we have is that the stereotype of the seven is a Robin Williams-ish sort of character that's like over the top and bouncing all over and high energy, when the stimulation in most sevens is much more low grade, right? It's just, you know, I just need a little bit of stimulation. Oh, that looks interesting. Or, oh, that's cool. That makes me feel good, you know, kind of things. So I want to be clear to set the, you know, kind of the definition of what we're talking about here, right? Because, you know, again, what happens in most of the literature about the Enneagram, they get caught up in, you know, something, you know, more specific very often. And then it becomes, well, yeah, I do that too, you know, and so forth. Okay. So let me just say that first. Now, I guess my question is around emotionality. Okay. How emotional are you? What kind of emotions do you experience? All that sort of stuff. And again, there's no type that is inherently non-emotional, right? Even fives feel emotions sometimes. There are easy ways to get me to cry, you know, and to feel good and all that sort of thing. But so for you, tell me about emotionality, what emotions look like in you, and so forth.
Yep. It's easy to say. Even from an early age, I've been in touch with my emotions, to use that expression. I will say the older I get, it has grown. The more I've had, you know, kids or whatever, as I meet with students, I'm just emotionally drawn to the story, to what's happening, very, very connected quickly emotionally. That's my answer to that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about anger.
That's a tough one. It's the one emotion for me that I struggle with.
In the sense of, in what way do you struggle with it?
I don't know how to be angry. I don't know how to express it. I have a complicated relationship with it. I can't decide if that's upbringing or what that is. It is kind of a subcategory in our Marco Polo chats. It has been here and there that I would say I don't have a good relationship with anger. I think I feel I'm judgmental towards anger, And I don't see it as a, yeah, I don't see it as a, an emotion that's helpful. I don't believe that. I'm just saying in the moment, that's how I feel about it. Like it feels, I feel like the person, if I see somebody being angry, I think they are not in control. And I think there's a little bit of judgment in me about that. And therefore I think I don't allow myself to get angry. Yeah, I won't allow. It happens more than I even care to admit. And it's probably not that often, like with my kids. I do see the emotion come up then. And that's like it. Like it's just not. And so again, some of my good friends in my life are pushing on me on it a little bit, like to lean into it. Even a couple of years ago, I got certified as a life coach, and they pushed on me with it there too, because I just was so adverse to it. I just so resistant to anger, and they would challenge me through coaching techniques of like what would it look like if you're angry around that topic or whatever. And it pushed me into areas that I just didn't ever go towards. Yeah, it's a tough one. It's funny that you bring that one up, because I think I have a decent relationship with almost any other emotion. Did I just validate it?
You're making it really hard for me. You're making it really hard for me to my premise here.
Yeah, but that feels so unique. Chime in, Creek.
Go ahead. Help me out here.
I'll just say I have noticed, especially in the past year. Well, no, in our entire relationship, you always have a calm demeanor. There in the past, year or so, I've seen you express more frustration, but never really anger. But underneath a lot of the story that we've shared of our past, like there is a defensiveness, again, without anger. Does that at all resonate or make sense?
I'm not even sure. Help me out with the defensiveness. And defensiveness about what, in what sense? What?
I never hear you be angry or vitriolic or anything like that towards your people. I can sense an underlying frustration of being constantly needing to subdue yourself to be less of, like, yeah, to filter yourself. And like you do that well, but it's also something that kind of eats at you.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So the support strategy for type two is a 0.8. And what that typically looks like is emotional volatility, typically in the form of anger, right? You're not paying enough attention to me. I will make you pay through being angry at you, through making you suffer. You're not loving me enough. I will make you pay through anger. It's the fatal attraction. You know, the extreme example of it is the fatal attraction. I'm going to, you know, kill your rabbit and, you know, wait for you in the bathtub with a knife kind of thing. So twos are angry people, right? Masked in kind of a saccharine surface of sweetness and, you know, need for connection. And when they don't get that connection, they get volatile, okay? Sevens think anger is a bad thing because my identity is around being the happy person, being the person whose job it is to make other people feel good. Okay. Of, you know, through my example of being happy. Okay. Now the dilemma becomes that I know that life is not all good. I know that, it's unfair for me to have to be the one who's responsible for other people feeling good. And it starts to irritate me a bit. And whenever I start to think about it, I push it out of my mind and, you know, reframe it or, you know, whatever. The frustration piece. Now, again, everybody gets frustrated. But sevens are notoriously frustrated because there's this whether it's a genuine expectation that the world is good and the world will be good and the world will bring me happiness, or whether it's just the public persona that they're putting on, the reality is that life disappoints. And so it's, you know, it's that expression of, you know, which they don't share with everybody, because their identity is in the happy, likable, helpful, you know, pleasant person. And they feel like they have this secret identity almost, right? That they're kind of only revealing to the people that are close to them, where they're expressing their disappointment. Oh, I thought this would be better, right? I thought I was so excited about this piece of cake, and it could have been better, or, you know, whatever it is. So the closer one is to a seven, the more they see that perpetual disappointment and frustration, right? Frequent frustration that comes up. And so they feel like they're bouncing back and forth between, hey, I need to count my blessings. I need to acknowledge that life is good, because it is good, you know, and this is the way people see me, and this is the way I want people to see me. But you know what? I thought there'd be more, okay? Which is the deep, dark secret of the seven. And, so what you're describing is consistent with the seven. Again, it could be something coming from, somewhere else, but it certainly doesn't rule out seven for me.
Okay, that's great. That's helpful.
So what do you think? Has your guess changed? Has it stayed the same? I'll give you a couple more seconds to compile all your data and take your best guess.
Could nine, is there any sort of nineness that we can make sense of these things? Some sort of transmitting nine or something.
That's a good observation, Craig. That's a really good observation, actually.
Nine life.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. I am looking at it here, like even some of this language of like, hey, look at me, but also don't. I resonate with that. Image conscious, ambitious, outgoing, as a transmitting nine. I mean, these are all things you guys already know. I'm just wrapping
up. Yeah. No, that's a really excellent point. It would explain the facial hair, huh? So,
that's a good point, though. You were after this, but I used to have a really long beard, like really long. And like, but I used to say that the previous version of me would never have done that. The Enneagram 2 that cared too much about what people thought. And as I was growing out of that, I'm just trying to use what I had. I grew out the long beard knowing that it wasn't embraced by most. And I was trying not to care about that because I liked it. And that was me trying to relieve myself from the pressures of caring too much about what other people think. And so eventually, after many years of growing that massive beard out, I finally cut it. But it didn't take long before I then did the mustache, like just something that was a little bit different, unique, and fun. And I probably shouldn't. It's probably way more professional to keep it trimmed. But like, I'm like, it's appropriate. It's fine. And I like it. So I'm just going to keep doing it. And that was then when friends would be like, yeah, I don't know, you're a four. You just want to try to be too unique or things like that. And I don't know. So I don't know where that fits into all of that.
Yeah. You know what? This is a really interesting hypothesis. You're married, Johnny, right?
Yep.
Tell me about your wife.
What about her?
Tell me about her.
Okay. We think she's an Enneagram 9, maybe a 1. She's an ER trauma nurse, just really good at that stuff, at saving lives, and very analytical. Many times in our relationship, when you think of like stereotypes of like the man of the house or the woman of the house, our roles feel flipped in some ways. Like I'm really emotionally dialed in and like to talk about my emotions and feelings or things like that. She's less interested in things like Enneagram or philosophy or things like that. She's much more practical. And she's a ferociously loving mother and just cares for her kids, will do anything for them. Our relationship happened quickly. Met one summer, got engaged in 6 months, and was married 6 months later. And we've been married now for 17 years. And marriage is fun and beautiful and extremely challenging. And all of it. So,
Another data point, Johnny is, we've talked back and forth about just his trajectory and desires for his future and all that other stuff. And there's vision for certain things that he wants to see happen, and also a conflict around it as well. I don't know. If I try to be too detail-oriented, I'm going to say false things. But there is a conflict around chasing after some things sometimes, is an observation that may not be correct. But my observation is, I like the idea, but I don't know if I can do it. I don't know where to start. That sort of thing. Would that be accurate, Johnny?
Yeah, like I've been trying to like be honest with myself around this topic. Like I feel like a hopeless entrepreneur. Like I have all these ideas and things, and then I don't pursue most of them, or I'll present them to the right person, or maybe I'd say the wrong person, and they take the idea and they make it happen. Things like that happen all the time, and I blame it on things that I think are really understandable. Like I'll say, like, that's too much of a risk. I've got 4 kids at home and a wife. I can't like leverage my house and whatever. I mean, and they're like, well, a real entrepreneur would. And I just can't, I can't get there. But you know, I use the analogy of like, if I inherited $10 million, there's some business ideas I would try right now, because the risk is gone. And I would definitely try it, and it sounds fun to use that word. And I'm like, let's do it. But I'm not willing to do it because I'm not willing to fail at the expense of like my family or others. Like it's just too high of a cost.
Yeah.
So I've all these ideas. In fact, it's got to be exhausting to my friends like Creek and others. I bring up stuff and then I don't really make it happen that often. Now, it's not that I don't, like there's times where, you know, I pursue the life coaching or I pursue things, but the risk has to be pretty low. I'm not going to just start a business, even if I think it's a really good idea, because I think I'm too afraid that it'll fail. Is that kind of what you're referring to, Creek, a little bit? Okay.
And if it fails, there's obviously the financial and life impact, right? But what else about failing?
Yeah, I'm sure there's something personal there, but I think I cloak it and blame it on my family or things like that. Or I'm like, it's not worth the risk for them. But yeah, since you're asking that question, I probably used to lean around like, I don't want people to perceive me as a failure or somebody who can't pull something off. And that always annoys me that I care too much about that. Like I want to be liberated from that. But I do think I care about being perceived as someone who has the idea. He has good ideas, but he can't make it happen. And by pursuing an idea that does then indeed fail, will then validate what I'm perceiving other people's to perceive me as, like as someone who can't pull it off.
I want to go back to your wife for a moment. How much time and energy do you put into trying to make her happy?
I feel like a significant amount. Like I think about it all the time. I was thinking about it multiple times today on what I want to do for her for Valentine's Day that I think would be more thoughtful than just flowers. Yeah. That was just today. Yeah. I don't know if it's always lands from her perspective that way, but that is what I'm attempting at all times. Not at all times. I would say I feel like I'm thinking about it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Creek, man, I think you hit it on the nose. And let me share why I'm heading this direction. Okay. So, Creek, you know, in particular, since we're talking about assessment, you know, my approach is to come up with a hypothesis and then argue hard for it, and then see if it breaks down in some way, right? But when something does break down or another hypothesis comes along, oh, wow, okay, interesting, let's explore that, right? Because I just made a really strong case for 7, and now I've pretty much thrown that right out the window based on Creek's observation, because as soon as he said it, I could feel it in my chest, right? I just, oh shit, that's it, right? And there's a couple of things, right? Number one, the case for transmitting is pretty strong, okay? But it's your style of transmitting is not the, I've got to do all the talking here and dominate the conversation, right? I don't doubt that you can dominate a conversation, but that's not what's happening here.
If I need,
but
I try not to.
Yeah. And, you know, but some of the other things kind of cry out transmitting, right? I mean, even the way you're dressed now and, you know, like we've talked about the facial hair and that sort of thing. And, you know, and it's just an expression, but it's not a four-ish expression. I don't resonate any four with you other than, you know, being perhaps creative or expressing the way you look, which again would point to, transmitting. Now you're not a transmitting 7. Okay, so if you are a 7, you're not a transmitting 7. So if you are a transmitter, you can't be a 7, right? You're also not a transmitting 2, because those are the most intense and emotionally volatile and angry of the profiles, okay? So this transmitting 9 thing is really resonating strong because it explains the appearance of the 7. It really explains the desire to be liked by people. And yeah, what you just said about your wife, you know, is just because the key issue for the transmitting 7, I'm sorry, the transmitting 9 is losing themselves in the significant other. Okay. There's almost like an abdication, not an abdication of responsibility or something, but, you know, my life becomes about you almost and making you happy and feeling, you know, content with you. Now, this doesn't mean they don't resent them. It doesn't mean they don't carve out time for themselves, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, if you're thinking about how to make your wife happy multiple times a day, this is not normal, John. No, that's not what I mean. So it's pointing to something deeper.
Does this change anything? Here's a nuance. I do
want
my wife happy, and I do think about it. I was trying to sit here and listen and like be honest with myself. I think also many times I'm just trying to make sure she's not unhappy with me.
Yes.
I don't know if that changes anything, but
it reinforces it. In fact, what it says to me is if I make her happy, she'll leave me alone. Right. I mean, not that extreme. Right. Yeah, but no. It's the happy life, happy wife, happy life thing. Right.
As she like left for work last night, I thought almost everything was done in the house, but I couldn't help but ask, is there something I should be working on tonight? And I'm curious if in my mind I was like, because I don't want to hear about it that I didn't do it. Like, your sub points here, by the way, real quick on the transmitting 9.
Yeah.
My first point I wrote down that you said was it was the most misunderstood of all the 27 subtypes.
Yeah.
Of course. Next, but okay.
Next, image conscious, ambitious, and outgoing. The hey, look at me, but also don't. Likes and dislikes recognition. And then you used a word I don't use often, but you said cajoling. And as I like look into the definition of that, because I don't use that word often, I'm like sweet talking or flattering. Like I'm like, I have that tool if I want to use it. But yeah, continue. But those I'm connecting with that more than when you said 7. I wasn't not connecting with the 7. I was seeing things about
it. But it's clear it wasn't a tight fit. With the seven. So, yeah. So I'm happy to abandon that hypothesis.
Another data point. I remember, Johnny, you said something of like, and this is what made me think preserving indifferent is, which would be counter to transmitting, but your car, like you buy things so you don't have to worry about fixing them.
I do like,
you don't like maintenance.
Yeah, I will work extra hard to not have to maintain it later.
Yeah, which that actually, for me, speaks to something related to the preserving domain, right? Not necessarily a dismissal of it or an ignoring of it. What happens with transmitters is that the preserving domain is the, you know, zone of inner conflict. So I pay attention to it and don't. I, you know, can obsess over it and then I hate it at this, you know, and so there's this sort of back and forth. So there's this tension between, you know, ambition and restraint.
I mean, 100%. Yeah. I feel that. I couldn't understand why I felt it.
Yeah. So it's this, you know, what happens with the nine is there's this, you know, kind of distorted relationship with the strategy at point three. And, you know, point three is all about striving to feel outstanding. Okay. The nine wants to be outstanding, but they don't want anybody to see them as desiring to be outstanding. Right. So, yeah, I'd like to be that guy in the spotlight, but I don't want to be that guy who wants to be in the spotlight.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, and it creates this huge tension in them. And so what happens, particularly with the transmitting nine, is that there are these behaviors where you say, geez, man, this guy, you know, I mean, you know, he loves the spotlight, or he's, you know, jumps into it or whatever. And then you start noticing, he's pulling his punches. Mm-hmm. Right. And there will be times when he could be in the spotlight where he, you know, steps out of it or doesn't go into it. Yeah, this is resonating. Boy, I'm going to kick myself for not seeing this one. So, but, you know, it just goes to show you that this stuff's hard and people are complicated.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's funny. I gave you that whole journey of like my six to the two to the one and three wing to the four and the eight. And then you said seven and one was the other one that we didn't talk about. And I guess we didn't talk about five.
Yeah.
But
and like, we didn't talk about the nine.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Nine is what I meant to say.
Yeah. You know, and the transmitting piece, it accounts for a lot of the two stuff, right? Because, you know, look, the transmitting thing is, I want to attach to your face, you know, because it makes it easier for me to, you know, transmit to you.
What a weird turn here at the end, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's,
So wait, Johnny, does this resonate better?
Better. I will just say, like, I need time with it, but his rationale for the navigating seven, it didn't not make sense. Like, I wasn't like, hey, you're way off, but it wasn't connecting as much as this is right away. Like, this one is connecting more. And some of the things that we're kind of unpacking right now, I'm like, yeah, a little bit more than when we said navigating seven. So when you were off the call, Creek, I did say how ironic that we're talking about a whole nother number that I haven't really considered.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And so it's just been all around around all the numbers. But that's interesting. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's a huge amount that resonates with me here with the transmitting seven and feels
nine.
I'm just geez, man, oh man. The transmitting nine, and you know, even when I remember during the certification program, even when you would challenge me, you would do it gently and with self-deprecation. You know, you would always qualify things. Of, well, you know, hey, this is, you know, or I'm just a, you know, kind of thing. And again, that's classic nine stuff, right? It's, I like this, this premise. So,
in the few minutes we have left, if I may, can you help unpack a transmitting nine a little bit more for me? Like some of the shadows or just to take advantage of the time I have with you. What are here?
So
pattern of expression would be good, I think, too.
Yeah. So with the pattern of expression, okay, what happens with transmitters is, transmitting is what I enjoy, right? I like to express myself. Now, again, the nine, transmitting nine, is going to do it in a more nuanced and subtle way than some of the others. Okay. But it's not always that subtle. I am fully convinced. Now, I've been studying actors and actresses, for a long time. And, my oldest son just came back from the emergency room. He's got a broken ankle. So let's see.
If you need to go, I want.
No. Wait. We're good. We'll do another 5 minutes or so here.
It's broken. What is he going to do?
Yeah, right. my Dr. Quinn medicine woman here or something? What am I going
to do? He ain't going nowhere.
And if he does, I can catch him, So. So it's this. Again, it gets back to this look at me, don't look at me kind of thing. Right. There's also a tendency to rely on reflected spotlight of, doing things in a way that other people will say, oh, that Johnny, he's such a great guy, instead of you having to say it. Right. Or, being helpful to people so that they'll bring up, oh man, Johnny's awesome kind of thing, and so many of these things are not conscious. Okay. But they start having, now, I'm sorry, we were talking about the pattern of expression. So transmitting, but nuanced. Okay. The zone of inner conflict is in the preserving domain. Okay. I think a lot about ways to make money, but I don't ever completely, don't always follow through on them completely. I think a lot about taking care of my health, but I don't always do it the way I should. I'm pretty ambitious and I can, get out there and make money or, make something happen, but, don't ever feel completely comfortable in that area. So it's, sometimes I get really structured and, persnickety. There's an adjective for you, Creek, for the future. I get really persnickety, and then other times, screw it, I just don't care, right? So there's a lot of that inner conflict in the preserving domain. Now, the navigating stuff in this case is all about political dynamics and group dynamics and gossip and, what's this person doing with that person? And, it's the non-transactional chit-chat that people do. And usually transmitters just don't have an interest in that, right? It's like, why do I have to be bothered with organizational politics? Leave me out of that stuff. I don't care what this neighbor's doing with that neighbor beyond just being polite, right? Kind of thing. If this person doesn't seem to have, not that they're dismissive or, cruel or anything like that. It's just, it takes a lot for me to get dragged into chit chat about people that I don't really know and don't really care about that much. Okay. Which can happen there. So that's kind of how the pattern of expression works. The key thing is the relationship with the connecting points, right? So, like I said, that distorted relationship of the strategy of striving to feel outstanding. Okay. I want to be outstanding, but I don't want to be the guy looking like he's trying to be outstanding. Okay. I want to be accomplished. I want to go after my own goals, but I don't want other people to think I'm the kind of guy that goes after my own goals. So I have a tendency. I like to say that the three doesn't necessarily sacrifice. They commit suicide, right? It's I don't say, hey, I really want this, but I want you to have it first. So I'm going to sacrifice myself. It's more like, I'm going to take myself out of the way here. Right. So I don't get your way of being happy.
That's what a nine does. I think you said that's nine. What a three does.
Did I say seven again?
I think you said three.
Three. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was jumping around there.
Boy.
So, the nine has that attitude when it comes to things that's striving to feel outstanding. The other thing you start to see is the point six stuff, right? It's the support strategy. I start looking for some foundation of security and stability and belonging. And, you know, in order, you know, when I start to feel anxiety, I start to say, okay, what is my, you know, what grounds me? What makes me feel okay? Where do I kind of hide out and, you know, recharge and all of that stuff. So you can start to see that six-ish stuff starting to come out. So those are the dynamics, you know, typically that we see here.
Another data point, Johnny, is how quickly your students just kind of fall apart.
You mean
what's the couch name? What's the couch outside your office called or something?
The cry couch or something. Yeah. Are you saying like how they're quick to connect and open, or is that
this all? Nines just hold a really great space for people that make them feel safe and accepted often.
Yeah, that's a subconscious and conscious big draw for me. It's something I just find myself doing at all times. Not all time, a lot of the time. And just sniffing out, like, I bet if I just ask this question, we're going to go there. Like, and we tend to, I just never connected that with any sort of nine.
Yeah.
And energy.
The transmitting nine. See, again, you know, like we've talked about, the transmitting nine is really, it's just not accounted for in the literature. Right. And, the transmitting nine is brilliant at connecting to people, making them feel comfortable, making them feel at ease, making them feel like you're the only person in the world right now. And, you know, you being happy is all I care about. Even if it's not real, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's not that it's disingenuous, right? But it's their way of transmitting, you know, I put you at ease. I open you up so that I can transmit to you. And sometimes transmitting is just listening, right? But, you know, and this is something, you know, that I caught when we spoke last. You were talking about helping people actualize, you know, helping people leave, you know, your students leave better equipped to be in the world, right? And to be functional in the world. And again, that's such that's a real transmitting thing. It's not only transmitting, but it's, you know, what's implicit to that is I want them to leave carrying something that is my best version of myself, right? Quite frankly, how I wish I was, you know, how I am when I am at my best and, you know, all that sort of stuff, so that they leave thinking, you know, life's a, you know, the world's a great place and, you know, you can do things and everything's going to be great and you can bring light into it and all those things. Yeah, it fits.
Wow. So if we meet another time, will we pivot to
next week? You're a four, Johnny.
Yeah.
No,
finally.
Yeah, that's funny.
No, look,
it's your four season. Yeah. sorry.
Now, I look again. Try this on. If my confidence that you were a navigating seven was at about 65%, I'm at 95% on this one.
Wow. Right?
And it's just, you know, as soon as Creek mentioned it, I said, oh, why didn't I see that?
Yeah. What do you think, Creek? Are you even more affirmed?
Yeah. I mean, things are falling into place a little bit easier and you do keep track of your students almost like my little legacy is going out there. What are they doing? How are they affecting the world?
I do.
So I don't know. There's a lot that makes more sense and accounts for the contradictions that I see in your behavior. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay. I'm all curious. Right. I'm curious what other Seth will think of all this, but thanks for letting me record.
Yes.
Thank you, Mario. Thank you, Creek.
Thank all right, guys. Thanks. Hey, this was fun. This was fun, Johnny. Yeah. No, thanks. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Yep.
Later.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information about Awareness to Action, their certification programs or events, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com.